Hi everyone, this is Mark Lane at KVPI. It's time for our special edition of What's Happening, and I've finally got all these guys back together. The last time we did this was more than 10 years ago, and it was way past due to get to a group that a lot of people in the Ville Platte area remember very, very well and have a lot of fond memories for. And we have everybody except two members here, and we're very pleased to have a reunion of a well-known group called Last Flight in our studios today, and it's in connection with a soon-to-be-released issue of the Bonne Nouvelle that's going to have a lot of photographs and a lot of interesting stories about this group. And I'd like to make welcome to our KVPI microphone once again, Vic Slavin, who played bass with the group Last Flight, Tommy Richard, who played guitar, Carl Bordenlaw, who played trumpet and keyboard, or just trumpet?
A little bit of both.
Okay, Jay Tassin, trombone, Perry Bordenlaw, trumpet, and Jerry Bakke on the drums. Fellas, thank you for joining us.
Let's
reminisce. In fact, right before we turned on the microphone, you guys were mentioning something that you had forgot to actually give to Nina to put in the article. What was that item that you just remembered? This is one of the early times where you got together, guys.
Yeah,
we got to kind of share our microphone one with another and talk.
It was very early. Me and Tommy Joe kind of went back a little bit further, but he gives me a call one day and says, man, I found this drum. It has a light in this bass drum, and it hits it, and the light comes on and off every time he hits that pedal. So we go over there, and we talk to him, and the guy's name was John. And that was another start, and Vic came right after that, you know, right in that time frame as well.
But and who actually started Last Flight? Who were the first original members of the
group? Me and Tommy. I'm Jay and Tommy.
Okay. And that's how it all started. What year? What year are we talking about?
I got my guitar in Christmas of the sixth grade, and he got his right about that same time. A couple of months before, right about the same time.
So sixth grade, Jay, for you would be about what year? 1970 or before that?
Oh, man, this was in the 60s.
In the 60s, 67, 68?
See, I graduated in 74, so that would go back.
68.
Wow.
We were delivering papers together. That's how we met each other, delivering the Daily World. And that's how we met. And then we started talking guitar and all kind of stuff. And
who were you listening to on the radio back in those days?
Chicago.
Who were your musical influences back in the 60s?
Chicago, Blood, Sweat, and Tears, even a little Beatles. Chicago wasn't at that time.
And this is a little bit before Chicago.
Yeah, it was before Chicago. I mean,
Beatles, I guess.
Beatles.
Jay, since you and Tommy were the actual first guys, the nucleus of a brand new band, that those guitars you bought, where did you buy those guitars from?
Montgomery Ward.
Do you remember how much it cost, that first guitar?
Let's see, the guitar and the amp was a kit for $39.
Was there a Montgomery Ward in Ville Platte back then?
Yes.
Wow.
It was ordered, and it was a silver tone amp, if I remember correctly, and the guitar was...
Do you still have it?
Oh, no. That didn't burn up long. The guitar was pretty bad, too.
It was, huh? How did you learn how to play? Did you learn it on your own, or did somebody teach you?
Self-taught, but I started playing trumpet at Ville Platte High in elementary.
Wow.
And that's what started it, and then I went to guitar. That was in June, or the summer of this, between the fifth and sixth grade.
Okay, put your mic a little closer.
Who was your band teacher at Ville Platte High?
Richard Pryor.
Richard Pryor.
Not Richard Pryor.
No.
It was
not,
James Pryor.
Not the comedian Richard Pryor.
No. It was James Pryor.
James Pryor.
Was the director then. And then Lindley. Doctor. Not doctor.
Yeah.
Something Lindley. Was after that, Carl.
First name. I don't know what his first name was.
Yeah.
I forgot.
Not sure on that one.
Tommy, let me turn the microphone, get you one of the microphones. That first guitar, Tommy.
It was a... Montgomery Ward's Gaiatone.
A Gaiatone.
It was a used one that my father bought me. He got it from my uncle, and he was supposed to learn how to play, and so he'd keep it in his closet. And while he was offshore, I'd pull it out the closet, and before you knew it, I learned how to play, and I learned a lot from Jay, because Jay, you know, we learned together, really.
I want to ask you, Tommy, and to you, Jay, first song you learned on the guitar. What was the first song you learned? The first rock and roll song that, I guess one of the easy ones that you learned. Do you remember what was?
Revolution by the Beatles, I think.
Really? Was that it?
No, we had some older ones. Old ones.
How about Louie Louie or something like that?
No,
you can't have too many cards on Louie Louie.
Heard it
the other day, a Creedence song?
That was some of the
Proud Mary?
Most of the stuff we did back then was C, A minor, F, and G, or C, F, and G.
I know one of them, a Wildwood Flower.
Wildwood Flower.
Oh, that's right. Instrumental.
Oh, that's an old country instrumental.
Wildwood
Flower.
It was like a lead lick.
So, uh-huh.
You know, that was a pretty cool... Yeah, and there was another one too.
We worked for about 6 weeks to figure out the chords to Proud Mary.
Proud Mary, I was sure one of
them. that would. It took you 6 weeks to learn it, huh?
If I remember correctly, we couldn't figure out them chords.
Okay, so the nucleus of Last Flight was Jay Tassin and Tommy Richard. Now, how did the other guys come on board?
Well, I came in after that. I was probably the third one, but I came in after. After they started, then Tommy and I were real good friends, and we lived just across the highway from each other. And he asked me if I wanted to play in the band, and I said, "Well, I don't know how to play a guitar, and I don't have a guitar." He said, "Well, I got one. I'll show you how to play."
Yeah, so, I showed him the regular guitar.
Right.
In
one night, I went spend a night at his house.
After that, we had three guitar players, and if you're gonna make a band, somebody has to play bass. So right.
How did it decide that out of the three, one who would be the bass player?
It was real easy. Yeah, I mean, I learned how to play in one night, then I got in the band, and we started learning some songs, and then all of a sudden, I went to band practice one day, and Jay and Tommy had their guitar set up, and they looked at me, and they said, "We need a bass player, and that would be you." I said, they said, "Of course, if you want to play in the band, you have to play bass." And I wanted to play in the band, so I went and I got a bass guitar, and my mother and father bought me a Montgomery Ward's bass amp, I kept that for a long time. And
what's the deal with Montgomery Ward?
It was
no Sears or nothing else. It was all Montgomery Ward's.
Montgomery Ward's had the best stuff you could buy back then around here. Yeah. It worked well. I mean, it worked really well. You know.
Was it tough to go from learning how to play the guitar, Vic, to going over to becoming a bass player?
No, actually, I preferred it right off the bat. You know,
it was natural.
Yeah, I took to it real quick. It didn't take
it
long.
It wasn't very hard to pick it up.
It didn't take long at all. So. And the band changed drastically when I started playing bass.
Then we started looking for drummers.
Yeah, and then we started looking for drummers and really started to sound like a band with the bass.
So with the original three guys in the band, who was actually singing back then?
That was Tommy Joe that was singing back then. Actually,
you were the vocalist, Tommy?
Yes, he was.
I was.
He was.
Jay, you were singing?
Yeah. I sung something.
We attempted.
You attempted to sing. Well, yeah. Now, the early days, were you actually playing at dances, or you were just?
Actually, I'll tell you what happened. We were playing at one of the sock ops. We were playing at the Civic Center, and Tommy and Jay were singing, and we were playing. I don't remember who was the drummer back then. It might have been Little Mike or whatever.
Or Tracy.
And we were doing Beatles stuff. And Tommy sang "Old Darling" that night.
Do you have a recording of that?
Oh God, no! Because that was the end of his singing career. When he sang that "Old Darling" song, we decided we need another singer.
I would love to hear that.
Not me.
The dogs didn't want to hear that.
Do you remember how much you were getting for those very, very early gigs?
About 10 or 20 bucks each.
Which is pretty good spending money for school kids, huh?
Yeah. Things got better.
Who's the next guy that came in? Well, were you known as Last Flight back then?
Not at that moment.
What was the name of your band back then? Did you have a band name?
Front Page Revival. Backstreet Court.
The Front Page Revival and Backstreet Court were the original bands. And after I got into it, when Last Flight started.
Backstreet Revival?
Backstreet Court.
And Backstreet Court.
And Front Page Revival. And then after we got to where,
that was
a long time. We talked about that too with Miss Nana, that we had the Dreamers with Con Johnson, but that was way, way back when.
Yeah, but Con was still part of Front Page.
Front Page.
Get your mic a little closer, Tom.
Yeah, he was.
Right.
Tom was in the front.
But we really didn't call ourselves Last Flight until Jerry Bakke got in the band.
So who was next in line? Who was the next guy that came in? Jerry was the next that came in?
Paul
Hoddle came in, then Jerry.
The singer.
And then the horn sections came in about the same
It was
time.
Determined right after you got on, Vic, that you needed a vocalist, huh?
Correct. Well, I was playing with them before, and I mean, I'd listen to them. But, actually, the PA was so bad you couldn't really hear them, you know. But whenever the PA got good enough to where you could hear them, we realized we needed some.
Were you saying basically that the music was trying to drown the vocalist out at the time?
The music was always good. Yeah. You know, actually, it was one thing we always strived to play the parts right. You know, so the music was always good. The vocals was something we always had a little trouble with.
Okay, so Jerry was next in line.
Yes.
After Paul Hoddle. Jerry, tell me, let's get the microphone over to you. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how did you get into the music business? Did you have a drum? Were you playing drums when they came to, you came to them or they came to you?
They came to me. And I don't know how they heard about me, but I had been playing, well, since I was six, you know. I started,
6 years old?
Yeah.
Yeah, you were drumming? You were playing drums
at six?
Well,
I was playing the footstool at six, but I graduated to the drum set at seven. So
wow.
I practiced and practiced at the Pink House behind my mother's house, you know?
That's next to the Baptist church, huh?
Right. Yeah, exactly. And I don't know how they heard about me. Somebody...
Were you playing in another band before that, before you joined up with Last Flight?
No, I played with my brothers occasionally, like a wedding or something like that, because my older brothers, they played guitar and different instruments. So every once in a while, I'd play a live job, but very, very little. Basically, I'd play to records, you know, stuff like that. And, yeah, they came and they heard I could do some Chicago, I think.
Right. Well, Paul Hoddle had told us that there was a boy from Sacred Heart that had
Yeah,
that could
Paul
play drums
and I went to the same school.
And that he could actually play the licks to Make Me Smile and some of the other
wow.
Chicago songs. And
yeah.
And we went and listened to him, and he actually could. And he was only probably about...
He had a floor tom sitting on a cardboard box.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of make do.
It was make do.
Your first
that,
drum...
Now, that was a
Jerry,
Sears
your
drum set.
Your first drum set was a Sears?
Yes. Well, now, I take it back. My first set, my parents bought me. It was from Otis Smith.
From Otis Smith at the Evangelist
Club?
Right. That was a used set, you know. And so they bought me that set.
Uh-huh.
But I kind of stopped in between a couple of years, kind of, you know, laid off of it a little bit. And then the next set was a Red Sparkle from Sears. That was, you know, a brand new set. But unlike their Montgomery Ward, mine was Sears.
A cut above.
Yeah.
I knew somebody was going to do that. Was going to slam Montgomery Ward. I knew he was coming. You wouldn't have that old Otis Smith drum set.
No, and I
that would be a collector's item.
It would be.
Gosh, I'd like to put that in our museum. Gosh.
I don't know. I can't really recall what happened to that set. But I imagine my parents sold it when I was kind of in a lull between playing, you know? They probably sold it to somebody, got rid of it.
Well, who are some of your musical influences? You like to, obviously you like Chicago, huh?
Yeah, that was probably the most, yeah. Chicago, of course, later on, Steely Dan and Doobie Brothers. Stuff
All
like
that 70s music, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, so Jerry come on board. Who is next?
The horn section came, the horns after.
So you had no horns prior to that. There was no horns.
No horns.
Yeah. Okay, Perry.
Okay.
Tell us your story, the Perry Bordelon story.
Well, let's see if I remember right.
Perry, did you come to them or they came to you?
No, they came to us.
Yeah, we told he was.
I was playing in the high school.
The high school band
at
the Academy.
Evangeline Academy.
What year are we talking about now here, Perry?
That was
71.
Early 70s?
Oh, is that early?
Early 70 to 71.
Yeah, the early 70s.
And you were in the school band at the Academy?
Yeah. And, in fact, Carl Bordelon was my band teacher.
He was a band director.
Really?
Carl was he's also my first cousin.
Really?
We cousins. But anyway, it was me, Jay, and Anthony Gilroy. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I was playing guitar, but then Tommy
Oh, yeah.
Said,
let's get the microphone over to you, Jay.
Okay, I was playing guitar, me and Tommy, and then Tommy came to me and said, and I think Vic, we're all kind of sitting together, and he said, hey, we can get some horn players. And I said, well, who? He says, Perry, Paul, and Anthony Gilroy. I said, really? He said, yeah. So they came in with just two trumpets, them two. And then I started doing some trombone stuff along with it and kind of bouncing between guitar and trombone. Then finally I put the guitar down, so I'm going all trombone.
You did a lot of horns.
You know,
so you did that. That was the time you dropped the guitar and you went to the horns.
Yeah, I can remember they were playing
closer.
They wanted me to learn some Chicago song, and me and Anthony were kind of scratching our heads. You know, we were having a hard time figuring out. But we caught on. Eventually we caught on and blended right in, you know. But it was rough starting off.
Were you playing Were you playing in any band before they came to you?
Actually, I did play in some band, but I was playing guitar. I was playing guitar and singing a little bit.
What was the name of that band?
I don't think it had.
You don't have a band?
No,
name
didn't have a name, and we stayed together probably about 6 months, and then got out. You know, I stopped playing with them, I got into the trumpet more, you know.
And Carl came in about the same time?
Yeah, only how many months? A few months later. It was a whole year?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, probably close to a year.
Yeah, more. Tommy and I don't mean to interrupt, but
sure, go ahead.
Well, we just found out tonight that Perry actually plays guitar.
Y'all didn't know this?
We've never seen him play guitar.
I did for a little while.
This is the first time I hear
him. And I've known him for 40 years.
So you're learning new things tonight.
Yeah.
Oh man. But
Was it a change of pace when those guys asked, "Hey, can you play Chicago type music?" Was it tough for you to learn? Or?
It was for the first few weeks, but
what was the first Chicago song you learned?
The first Chicago.
Was it Make Me Smile?
Make Me Smile.
One of the hardest ones.
125, 6?
No.
No,
Make Me Smile.
Make Me Smile.
Everybody was joking.
And that's why we were scratching our heads. You know, we were saying, "How in the heck are we gonna do this?" But yeah. But we practiced a lot, and we eventually learned the parts. You know, and from there, I don't know what else we did.
When Carl came aboard.
Let's get Carl on the microphone a little bit.
Which Carl probably has the most. And there's no doubt about it, has the most musical knowledge of all of us, and he took that horn section and he whipped him into shape, because he started writing and putting the arrangements together. They play in three-part harmony all the time, and our little three horn section sounded like about an eight-piece horn section with the way he put the stuff together.
Carl, give us your musical background.
Well, I played, I was in a Ville Platte High band. I started learning trumpet in ninth grade. My band director was Mr. Pryor. And my influences were Louis Armstrong, Doc Severson, Buddy Rich, just, you know, until rock in Chicago, and then Chicago came out later. So I went through high school, I went to USL, and I majored in music.
What year did you graduate from the high school, Carl?
1968.
And college?
71, 72. I didn't really graduate. I just.
But you were teaching. What you're saying? You were teaching at the academy when Perry was coming up. 72.
Yeah.
When these guys were all coming up.
Yeah, I hadn't had the degree yet, but later I got the degree later on. Yeah. So. And
how did they came to you? You said, well, or did you hear about this band? And you said, hey, I think I want to join. How did you get?
The way it happened, they asked me to help them with some horn arrangements while I was teaching at the academy. So I said, okay, no problem. So I wrote out the parts. Then later on, they asked me to join the band. That's basically how it happened. And they were playing at the Vanishing Club at the time.
Were you playing at any rock and roll band prior to this?
I played with Jay Randall. I played with the Travelers. That was the first band I played with, the Glenn Carl and the Travelers. That was about the time of the Diamonds.
Oh, yeah, Mike Taylor.
Mike Taylor and the Diamonds, yeah.
Milton Pete
and
the Diamonds.
And then I played with, what other bands? Jay Randall, and I sat in with Alan Wayne, yeah. I sat in with Alan Wayne. And a few other bands, I don't remember the names right now, but a few other bands I sat in where I'd sit in on trumpet.
I guess this is a better time than to remind all of our guests today to please, if you have your cell phones with you, please
silence them if you're hearing all kind of little noises. It's the cell phone noises, folks, and it's not the musicians here that are with us, okay? Some of them are ringing off. I guess their wives or their better halves are saying, where are you tonight?
Sorry, Mark. I'm
right. Okay, good. Well, I didn't name any names, okay? Vic, I did not name any names, even though it was Vic's cell phone that was going off.
Vic's cell phone.
Exactly. All right, so now we got the whole nucleus of Last Flight. My next question, you were named... You guys were named different names for the band. Who came up with the name Last Flight, and how did the name come about? Who's responsible for naming it, and how did that name? Who thought of the name, and where did the name come from?
Well, actually, Paul Hoddle.
Get close to the mic, Phil.
Paul Hoddle said, "Why don't we name it Flight?"
Right.
Why?
Well, I don't really know why. And I said Flight, and he said, "Yeah, like a bird flies, Flight." And then somebody else, I don't know who said,
I tell you what, if we call it Flight, let's call it Last Flight. I said, because I've been in so many different bands, this will probably be the last one. So we'll just call this one Last Flight. And that's how, something like that. And it was the last band I played.
And it was named at Tracy Foray's house at a band practice.
Right.
Wow. Well, you got a memory to remember that, huh?
Yeah, but he has even a better memory. He's been telling me some things I don't remember.
At Tracy Foray's.
Jay Dawson.
Was that the place where you normally, what was the practice place where Last Flight did most of your practices?
Well, the Pink House.
The Pink House. Was the spot once Last Flight.
The Pink House.
Was Last Flight. Which was a little pink house behind Jerry Bakke's.
On Main Street behind the
Baptist Church.
And was there a particular practice day every week where you guys got together?
We practiced every night. We practiced Monday through Thursday. We played every Friday and Saturday.
Friday and Saturday, where would you play? Where were the regular gigs for you guys?
Friday was a floating night. We played different places every Saturday for about 6 months to a year. Was Evangeline Club.
At the Evangeline Club.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And then came Friday and Saturday nights.
Right. Then we started playing both nights for a while.
Tell us about this record. You cut a record for Floyd, right?
Back in 1975.
Was it on Gin Records or was it on One Way?
No, the first one was on Gin.
On Gin.
Yeah.
Tell us the story behind It's a Holiday in Just a While.
It's a Holiday was as far as the words and the rhythm part of it was written by Paul Hoddle and I at my house on a sofa one night about 12 o'clock drinking moonshine.
And the inspiration just came.
We were just playing around and I said, Paul, what you think about this? And I played a little chord progression. I said, I've been playing this for a while. He said, well, sounds pretty good. Let me write some words. And he started writing the words down. And then the next day we went to band practice.
So you did the melody and he did the words?
I did the rhythms part of it, with the bass and stuff. Then we brought it to the band room. It was just kind of a rough thing. Then Tommy and the rest of them got involved. Carl and then put the horn sections together. Kind of hummed, what you wanted the horns to sound like. And Carl wrote it. And then Tommy put extra little parts in it, when we get to little bridges or little break parts, I wanted to play a particular break and he added some stuff to it and then he put the guitar rods in them and everything and then we just polished them up and we went to them.
How long from start to finish did it take you to do this?
The song itself? The song was written probably in 40 minutes, an hour between Paul and I, but actually finishing it up took probably weeks to,
a few weeks
to finish it up. Took, about a week to do it in the studio, if I remember right.
Yeah,
a lot of long nights.
It seems to me that Last Flight had you guys, at your prime, you had a big following in the Ville Platte area. Wherever you played, people followed you. Is that true?
Yeah. Yes.
Yep.
You had a big following.
In fact, one time we went play in over there close to Lawtel, that was that V-Dreams, what's that club over there that little guy V-Dream had? And he said, let Last Flight come. So we went, and he kept blowing some breakers. And I went outside with him to, Jay has to fix everything, So I went outside with him, and he says, son, y'all guys carry a crowd, huh? He says, I ain't got enough juice to carry this place. It was packed in that place. It was V-Dream. Y'all remember that on that in between?
Yeah.
You turn in right before you get to Plaisance, and it goes towards Lautel that cut across road.
Oh, yeah. Ronald.
The Hideaway Club.
Ronald V. Dream.
Yeah.
And he said, man, y'all carry a crowd. And, several places, a lot of people followed and came.
Yeah.
And we'd go play out of town.
We failed to mention one of your members that's not here tonight.
Yes, Connie Mack Fuseli is not here tonight.
And he would play. And did Connie Mack come in later after the horns, or
he came in before? He came in. He was part of me and Jay and Tommy. He came in before with Jerry and the resto, but he came in just before Jerry.
Yeah.
You guys, except for Jerry, all you guys went to the academy. Is that how?
All of us went to the academy except Jerry Bakke and Paul Fontenot. They went to Sacred Heart.
Went to Sacred Heart.
Yeah.
That's how you all got together.
Yeah. Actually, what kind of organ kind of Mac started with?
Tell me.
Montgomery Ward.
Sorry, I ask you. I wonder if there's a kickback going from Montgomery Ward to some of you guys.
It would be nice.
Are they out of business?
Yeah, they're not anymore. But I tell you, back in 75, when we did the first 45 we did, It's a Holiday in Just a While, then we started getting booked by an agent out of Shreveport, and they started playing a lot.
Al Anderson.
And then they booked us to do an outdoor concert with Black Oak, Arkansas at Sycamore Point. And we did that.
That's when we knew we needed to cut a record.
Yeah.
And we were working on the record.
So you guys were doing gigs with Black Oak, Arkansas?
We opened up for Black Oak at Sycamore Point.
At Sycamore Point. And then whenever
you were hitting the big time.
Yeah. We had a 45-minute set, and they told us if they want you back, you get to go back for 15 minutes. So we got on court, and we went back, and we did some Chicago stuff. We did Make Me Smile and a couple of other tunes. And when we finished, Jim Dandy came and talked to us, you know, and he wanted to know how old we were, which most of us were 19 years old. And he couldn't believe that we were that young playing that type of music, the Chicago stuff, you know. So.
Yeah. We actually did our 45 record,
did
a Holiday.
We did Holiday.
I think it was the last song we did, huh?
Yeah. We did Holiday in Just a While in the encore, and then we came back with, we used to do all of the Chicago Live at Carnegie Hall stuff, just like they did it. And we did about 3 or 4 of their songs, just like the album. And
for someone who's never heard the band back when you guys were playing in the 70s, how would you describe what kind of music were you? Was it primarily the music with the horns, like Chicago and Blood, Sweat, and Tears? Were you doing some original stuff? Was it primarily cover stuff? What were people hearing on the bandstand?
We did all top 40 stuff.
Yeah. Whatever was popular on the radio.
Right. We did some rock stuff, too. Yeah. Allman Brothers Band, Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Lynyrd Skynyrd, Alice Cooper.
Alice Cooper.
You know,
Alice Cooper, Bad Company.
You see the horn. back then, calling them, they wouldn't play with any microphones. They just blew out without any microphones, and they played loud. They had to play loud, so they would get really tired after 5 or 6 songs. So we'd do 5 or 6 horn songs, and then we'd go with the rock and roll stuff and give them a break, you know. So,
what kind of crowds were you pulling at the Evangeline Club every Saturday night?
As much as it would hold.
You were packing them in?
Oh, yeah. Standing room only.
Who was the manager back then? Who was booking you at the Evangeline Club?
It's Uncle J.C. Moran.
J.C. Moran. Let me ask you a personal question. Did anybody meet future wives or through these gigs or anything? Or you rather not comment? Or I see everybody shaking their head, so maybe that's a question I shouldn't have mentioned
at all. Actually, Jay's wife is here with him tonight, which Marcia was one of the girls who followed the band around.
Really?
My wife's not here, which she followed the band around, too, back in the 70s.
I'm just wondering if
Jerry's wife.
Maybe I shouldn't have asked it that way. I'm just wondering if you had met your future wives or as a result of the band.
Yeah, I think myself, Jay, Jerry, and Perry, Carl's first wife.
Yeah, I kind of knew my wife before the band as well, but you know, we kind of, you know, the band helped, you know. We'd bring come in together and all that. You got anything to say?
well, I knew her from before.
But we
all hung out together so much. We were always together. We practiced 5 or 6 days a week, and we played every weekend. So if the girls wanted to be with the guys, they had to follow the band.
Was it tough to have ladies along at the gigs? Because I always heard that it's tough to balance dance jobs and have women and.
Was it tough for you guys?
Well, sometimes the ladies would get upset with the way some of the women would request a song. They come whisper in your ear a little bit too close to your ear, or they'd squeeze you a little too tight, or they would do this or they'd do that, you know. And they tell us, you look too happy talking to that woman, you know.
I'm sure there's groupies in every profession, and I see we have some more visitors that have just joined us. Hello, ladies. And we're right in the middle of our conversation with the members of the group Last Flight. So we recorded this song. How popular was It's a Holiday in Just a While? Well, let me ask you, when was it cut and where did you cut it at?
It's a Holiday in Just a While was cut in 1975, beginning of 75 probably, and it was cut at Floyd's studio here in Ville Platte. It was popular enough. It got us a lot of jobs. We did some interviews on the radio with it. In fact, back in that time, Joey Richard was a DJ in Alexandria, yeah. And he called us up in Ellic to do a live interview over there, and we got phone calls from all the girls in Ellic and everything. You know, so yeah, it was a big deal.
And the booking agent Al Anderson
was from Shreveport.
Was from Shreveport, and there was a band that we played in Abbeville at that little club, Owls, whatever it is, and the band was. The Family Tree. And they heard our song and they told Al Anderson. We had a phone call the next day and we sent a record as a demo.
Right.
And then before we knew, we drove up to Shreveport and took pictures and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, and you're going to see, you will see the picture that we took for Al Anderson for our promo stuff in the Bon Nouvelle, I think.
When is that coming out again? When is that issue of the Bon Nouvelle that's going to have your whole story?
September 25th, this month, yeah.
Look, we've already run out of time, but before I go, I want to ask everyone to go around the microphone. Your funniest story, the most embarrassing story, something that sticks in your mind that you don't mind sharing with us as being a member of the group Last Flight. Let's begin with you, Victor.
Well, mine's real easy. It's back at, we did a prom, high school prom, at the Catholic school in Grand Coteau.
Where?
In Grand Coteau.
Grand Coteau.
Academy of the Sacred Heart.
Academy of the Sacred Heart. And that's back when Deep Purple had come out with the song Smoke on the Water.
Yeah.
And Jay Toss and Connie Mack had decided they were going to make a smoke machine for us. And they had put some sulfur and gunpowder in a box with some open wires. And they were going to plug it in. The sparks were going to light all of the smoke up and everything.
It worked.
So we started off the song, you know, we started off the Deep Purple song, and Ibu was with us back then, Tony Johnson. Ibu plugged that thing in, the sparks flew, and the smoke came out of that thing like you would not believe, but it caught on fire. On the gym, right in the middle of the gym, it caught on fire. So then the nuns were going crazy, and Ibu grabbed that box, and he's running out of there with the flame and the smoke and everything, and we almost burned a hole in the floor, so... That was by far the most embarrassing movie. We were about 17 years old when we did.